and welcome to the Swiss Info Programme. I'm Susan Masika. Switzerland, which isn't a part of the European Union, has been watching with interest ever since the people of Britain decided to drop out of the 28-member group. Will the Brits look to Switzerland for ideas on how to manage life outside of the EU? Journalist Donal O'Sullivan has more on how Brexit is shaping up from a Swiss perspective.
L'Union européenne perd l'un de ses membres.
Großbritannien verlässt die EU.
La Grande Bretagne di bye bye alla Unione Europeica.
Comunque lo si interpreti il voto britannico.
That was some Swiss media reaction on the 24th of June 2016, the day after the UK voted to leave the European Union. Almost 2 years later, the dust is still not settled. What do we know about the shape of post-Brexit Britain, post-Brexit Europe, or even post-Brexit Switzerland? To get an idea of the current situation from a Swiss and from a British perspective, I recently spoke to two people working directly on this issue. The first person was the former British ambassador to Switzerland, David Moran, just before he left Bern after 4 years to move back to London to work directly on Brexit strategy. We talked over coffee in the rather grand drawing room of the British Embassy here in Bern, the same room, in fact, where Moran had hosted a breakfast event in June 2016 to watch the referendum results. I asked him what his reaction was that morning.
In this room where we're sitting, we had a big TV screen with the BBC and Sky and other media. And, I was asked the very same question, you know, how do you feel? And on Swiss media that day, I did a lot of interviews, as you can imagine. And the answer is, well, you know, the people have spoken. There was a very clear verdict. And now we need to work out how best we go from here.
Naturally, one of the main tasks of the ambassador was to reassure British citizens living in Switzerland, and there are over 40,000 of them, that their situation would not suddenly change and force them to leave the country. The status of Brits abroad and Europeans in Britain, once the UK leaves the visa-free Schengen zone, is one of the so-called three major divorce issues on the negotiating table. But it's also the one that Ambassador Moran is least worried about.
The main reaction from the British community here, rather like in the member states of the European Union, was to question, what does it mean for me personally? And so one of the immediate messaging points from London was, there is no immediate change. We're still members of the EU. And, you know, what we want is an early, mutually agreed arrangement which looks after EU nationals in Britain and British nationals in the EU. That approach very much applies to Brits in Switzerland. And that was something that we spent a lot of time communicating with the British community here.
But other pending questions associated with Brexit are still highly contentious. The size of the eventual leaving bill, the status of the border between Northern and Southern Ireland, and of course the type of relationship that the UK will maintain with Europe in the future. I also spoke with Chenny Nagy, a researcher at the University of Geneva and director of the European Union programme at the Swiss think tank Voraus. He's been following this issue closely for several years, and he reckons that there's still a long road ahead.
So my perspective on it is very simple. I think that phase one, so the divorce talks, was actually the easiest part of the Brexit procedure. The difficult task is starting now. It's the negotiation on future relations. This is going to be very, very difficult. UK has a starting position which is very different from EU. And it's possible that you have no deal with all the implications, the negative implications of it.
Nagy also says that intransigence in the negotiations, mainly from the British side, could easily lead to this no-deal scenario.
The problem I see is that UK started its negotiations with the EU as what we call an extreme opener, which means that UK had extreme positions when it started its negotiation with EU. UK asked for a lot of things that EU would never relinquish. And so the whole negotiations was not really a negotiation process. It was an adaptation process. The UK adapted and aligned with EU positions. And so one of the things that the UK, I think, has to learn is that red lines, EU red lines, are real red lines. The EU is not going to relinquish on certain principles. And when the EU says no, it means no. It's not a trick or a way to negotiate.
So, if the current expectations of the UK are unfeasible for him, what does he think possible future relations could actually look like? Over the past 18 months, various models have been thrown around, including the so-called Swiss model for post-Brexit Britain. This famous Swiss model allows Bern to remain outside the European Union while still benefiting from the single market through a network of complex bilateral agreements. But is it really still viable to envisage the UK securing such a deal?
This is very unlikely, because if you look at the Swiss bilateral way, it took more than 10 years for Switzerland to negotiate and conclude its own bilateral agreements. So it was a very long, cumbersome process. Also, you see that the bilateral way is very complex to manage. Now, EU asks Switzerland to conclude a so-called institutional framework agreement. And this is very complicated for Switzerland, because it would erode Swiss sovereignty. And as you know, Switzerland is very keen to defend its sovereignty. So you see that bilateralism is very difficult to achieve on one hand, and on the other hand, it's very cumbersome to manage, and it puts Switzerland in a situation, a very difficult situation now, with the EU asking for institutional changes.
This Swiss model was talked about quite a lot in the lead up to the vote. People sometimes called it the having your cake and eating it too model, since Switzerland manages to have access to the internal market without being a member. But, like Nagy, Ambassador Moran agrees that it's not the way forward for the UK.
We think that you need a bespoke model for the UK, because when you look at the UK, you're looking at a country that's been a member of the EU for half a century, and is totally convergent, totally integrated, compliant, etc., etc. So what you need with a partner that close to the European Union is something which both reflects that and reflects the economic interests of both the UK and the rest of the EU. What we want is something that's not the Swiss model, that's not any of the other models, but something that fits a country that's been part of the system for half a century.
So if the model needs to be something new and unique, is there at least something that post-Brexit Britain could learn from Switzerland? Nagy reckons that one option could be London applying to join the European Free Trade Association, or EFTA, of which Switzerland is one of four members, along with Liechtenstein, Norway and Iceland. He recently co-authored a paper on the feasibility of this option, which he says would be a way of avoiding the cliff-edge scenario of the UK leaving Europe without any backup trade agreements.
So the good thing with EFTA is that UK can leave EU, and therefore we leave the EU free trade agreements. And remember that EU has concluded 50 free trade agreements around the world. And so UK would lose these agreements, access to these agreements. And by joining EFTA, actually, it would enter EFTA's own FTAs. So EFTA, like EU, has concluded around the world a lot of FTAs. And therefore, it would be a way for the UK to minimize their trade losses.
And another option, Nagy says, would then be adhesion to the larger European Economic Area, or EEA, a grouping which offers extensive market access to the EU countries. But even if this might be the best economic solution, it comes with one major drawback that Britain is desperate to avoid: allowing the free movement of people across its borders.
The problem I see is that EEA includes free movement of people, and this is a no-go, this is a red line for the UK, especially when it comes to future relations with EU. But who knows? maybe if they end up with a Canada-like agreement, they will notice after a while that this is a suboptimal option, that they would have trade laws, they would have a difficult situation arising from this, and they can still change their mind and join EEA later. This is a possibility.
And what about the Swiss government in all of this? Is it sitting on the sidelines, rubbing its hands about the chaos in Europe and the UK? Or is it more worried about potential economic and political fallout for itself? Nagy's position is clear. He thinks Brexit is bad for Switzerland. Unlike many of his fellow citizens, he doesn't hold out any hope that Switzerland and the UK will suddenly somehow become allies in a shared battle to secure better deals with the EU.
Well, in two words, Brexit was a catastrophe for us. The EU now is very inflexible, unwilling to compromise on anything in terms of immigration, in terms of institutional framework agreement, which we are negotiating right now, as you know. It's a very difficult moment for us. I remember, by the way, in 2016, a lot of analysts here in Switzerland were very happy about Brexit, and they were saying that Brexit is going to be great for Switzerland because we'll have an ally outside and we're going to team up with the Brits, and it's going to be perfect for us because, you know, we are so isolated within this bilateral way. Finally, we'll have an ally outside, and this didn't happen.
So if Brexit has been bad for Swiss-EU relations, what strategy might Byrne best adopt in dealing with an angry and increasingly intransigent Brussels? Should it play hardball, or should it wait until the British dust has settled before trying to push through the next phase of the controversial institutional framework agreement?
Right. There are two strategies out there. First strategy is the prudent strategy. We wait until Brexit is set, until, you know, UK and EU get an agreement. This might take us 2 years, maybe 3 years. The second strategy would be to make concessions to EU, especially within the institutional framework agreement. The EU has certain demands when it comes to this agreement. If we concede, we can conclude an agreement this year and we can implement it next year, in 2019. I don't know what strategy will be adopted. I think that the Swiss will be prudent. They will adopt a low profile, and most probably they will wait that EU settles all issues with UK.
Of course, Swiss-European relations have always been a bit strained, especially since Switzerland voted in 2014 to limit the numbers of immigrants entering from the EU. A vote that set in motion many of the current difficulties around the institutional framework agreement. I asked Nagy why his country is showing signs of becoming even more Eurosceptic than ever.
Euroscepticism is a very complex phenomenon to analyze. I don't have easy answers, but there are certain factors which we can highlight. First of all, the high immigration we had coming from EU states to Switzerland in the recent years. This created some frictions, especially with the free movement agreements we have, as you know. Most probably the difficulties that EU is facing in terms of immigration, in terms of problems with Greece, in terms of the problems with the UK, etc., etc. There are lots of crises going on within EU, and of course, this erodes the image of EU in this country. More and more people see the EU as a failing project, and this probably fuels Euroscepticism in Switzerland.
Despite the Schadenfreude, it does seem clear from history, distant and recent, that a well-functioning Europe is in the interest of everybody in the region. Even Ambassador Moran, who is now fighting for a strong UK deal, agrees with this.
One thing we have to be very clear about, it's in British interests for Europe to succeed. We want Europe to succeed. We want a positive agenda for Europe and a positive partnership with Europe, and we're going to bring a lot of things to the table, for example, a very broad security partnership. Europe's proved remarkably resilient over the years and has had to deal, to be fair, with massive external challenges, in many cases has dealt with them as well as one can do in such a fast-changing world. I really do hope that Europe continues to find ways to adapt and thrive.
So there we have it. The UK wants to be strong alone, Switzerland wants to be strong alone, and the EU wants to be strong together. Almost 2 years after Brexit, however, it's still not clear how this win-win-win situation can work. Whether or not it's possible at all, or whether there will be one or more losers, is something that might take another few years to find out.
That was Donal O'Sullivan reporting on how Brexit is taking shape. Visit us at swissinfo.ch for more on Switzerland's relationship with the EU in our special dossier called Surrounded by Europe. Thanks for listening, and thank you to studio technician Donny Wheeler. I'm Susan Masika.